Election Day is next week, and early voting is already underway. It's a big election this year, with races that include everything from voting on local representatives to answering the question, should we have a constitutional convention? Add to that a new ranked choice voting system and redistricting, and people have some last-minute questions. Today on Hometown Alaska, we're here to answer them. I'm your host, Ann Hillman, and I'm joined by the head of the Division of Elections, Gail Fanumiai, over Zoom from Juneau. Thanks for being here. And in the studio with me in Anchorage is Jeanette Lee, a nonpartisan democracy researcher with the Sightline Institute. Thank you both very much for being here. And we are here to answer any of your questions. You can call us at 907-550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. You can also shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we're here to start out with some basic information to make sure people are ready to head to the polls this week. This weekend, November 8th. Gail, I'd love for you to talk just kind of about the basics, like what options do people still have for voting?
Sure. So options available to voters at this point are they can vote early at over 100 locations around the state, and that information is available on the division's website on where to vote early. And our website is elections.alaska.gov. They can still apply to receive a ballot electronically, which would mean they would be sent a ballot either by fax or online, but you cannot return your ballot in that manner online. You could only return it by fax or by mail. And then, of course, on Election Day, polls are open at our 401 precincts from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
And are there polling places in every community across Alaska?
I would not say every community, because some of our smaller communities do not have polling places. But the list of our polling places is on our website. 401 polling places open on Election Day.
Wow, that's a lot of them. And are they, like, if people can't find out online where their polling places are there other folks that you would suggest they ask, or places they can find out? Are there any phone numbers?
They can call any Division of Elections phone office and get that information. I can give you the main number here in Juneau is 907-465-4611. There's also a toll-free number, 866-952-8683.
Can you say the toll-free number again, please?
Sure, 866-952-8683.
Great. And I'll probably ask for that again at the end of the show, just to let folks know in case you can't access a computer, you can still find out where you can go vote. So with voting this year, there was redistricting, meaning a lot of people have new polling places. How many folks, like, do you have an estimate of how many people have new polling places, or what's the best way for people to find out where their polling place is?
I don't have an estimate as to how many people have new polling places. I mean, all voters were, with the exception of districts 37 through 40, were reassigned to new House district numbers. So a vast majority of voters around the state, I would say, have new polling places. And as a result of redistricting, we sent new voter identification cards to voters in July. And while the polling place location was not actually on the card, it was included in the letter that went with the card to say your new polling place is. And you can also look that up on our website as well, or call any office at the Division of Elections and we can give you that information.
Yeah, I noticed that on your website you actually have a really cool interactive map where people just enter their address and it pops up.
Right. That's new too. So that was another option. If you have access to a computer, you could do that.
Yeah, I definitely found that really helpful. So what happens if someone has moved and they didn't update their registration with their new address?
Well, if they've moved and they go to a new polling place that they think is in their new house district, their name will not be on the precinct register. And so they will vote a question ballot, which is, it's the same ballot you get as if you're voting regularly. They'll fill out a special envelope that will have information with their new voter registration information on it, and those ballots are returned to the division and reviewed by a board to determine how, what parts of that ballot may or may not count. So if you've moved from one House district to another, but share a Senate district, everything counts on that ballot except for the House district race. Or if you've moved completely out of your Senate district and you've moved from Juneau to Fairbanks, say, but you didn't update your registration in time, you can still vote, and the statewide races will still count on that ballot.
Okay. If you didn't update your registration, could you go to an early voting place and just vote the ballot from your previous address?
That's no, because if you go to an early voting location, like in Anchorage, say, if you go to the Region 2 office and you show your identification to the election workers, and they're going to pull you up in our voter registration system and say, "Oh, you live at 123 Highland Drive in Juneau," and they'll say, "No, I don't live there anymore. I moved to, 111 Cushman Street in Fairbanks." So they would have you vote an absentee in-person ballot, and you would fill out your information, and then accordingly, depending on how much of that ballot would count. And as I said before, if you move from like Juneau to Fairbanks, say, that would be a statewide only count for that voter.
Okay, and when that update
Best,
your
it's best for voters to update the registration and give us the updated information.
Yeah. So when they do that, will it automatically update their registration for future years?
It will, yes.
Oh, great. That's very convenient. If people are traveling out of town, they didn't have time to register or forgot to get an absentee ballot, and they go to an early vote location, do all of them have all of the ballots or no?
No, only a handful have ballots for all 40 House districts. Those would be our regional elections offices, City Hall in Anchorage, the state office building here in Juneau. Down in the Kenai, I believe they have a voting location that has ballots for like four House districts. The Mat-Su Borough office has all 40 House districts. The Anchorage Airport will be open on election day with ballots from all 40 House districts.
Cool. That's do you have any sort of numbers of how many folks end up voting at the airport?
I don't have those ready, at hand right now. I mean, but it is a useful place for people who forget and they're leaving town, and and it's convenient for workers there as well. If you go to our website and click on the Where to Vote Early link, you can put in a community name. It'll give you where the location is and what ballots they have available at that location.
Great, thank you. In terms of folks who are absentee voting this year, if someone wants to vote absentee by mail, what do they need to do to make sure that their ballot is counted?
Well, they need to, fill their ballot out to the best of their ability according to how they feel they want to vote for their candidates. I'm reminding people it's a two-sided ballot. The ranked choice races are on the front side of the ballot, and on the back side of the ballot is the constitutional convention question, as well as any judicial retention candidates. So they vote their ballot, put it in their secrecy sleeve, put it in the envelope, and then in the presence of another person over the age of 18, they should sign their ballot envelope. The voter would provide an identifier, such as their driver's license, their state ID number, last four of their social security number, voter number, or date of birth. And then they have to have their signature witnessed by that person who has seen them sign that ballot envelope.
Okay, and then the witness also signs it.
The witness signs, yes.
Okay. For mailing it in, it's 84 cents. What happens if someone doesn't have exact stampage or exact postage?
Well, according to United States Post Office publications, they cannot delay the return of election material and especially ballots to its destination if it has insufficient postage. So, according to their publications, we will still receive that ballot.
Okay. Oh, I had a quick question, actually, Gail. What is is there a cure process for anyone who fills out their absentee ballot envelope incorrectly. I know that there was some sort of lawsuit maybe about that, and I haven't tracked the status of it.
A cure process? What does that mean?
A cure process is basically the chance to fix your absentee ballot envelope if you fill it out incorrectly, if you forget to include a witness signature, or if you provide the wrong birth date or something mm-hmm. along those lines. And other states, many other states and jurisdictions have one in place for absentee voting. But Alaska, on a statewide level, does not. Anchorage, however, does have one in place for its vote-by-mail elections.
Oh. Gail, is there a cure process?
For state-conducted elections, mm-hmm. there is no cure process provided for in Alaska election law.
Okay, so people need to be pretty careful and make sure that they've got all the appropriate things.
Correct. I mean, and there are detailed instructions that are sent with every ballot. And so, you know, I highly encourage people to read the instructions. But you do need to sign as a voter, provide an identifier, and have your signature witnessed by somebody over the age of 18. And the witness signs the back of that envelope as well. Ballots can be delivered. They can be put back in the mail to the division, or they can be dropped off at any voting location that's open, including polling places on election day.
Okay, so people can drop it off on election day at a polling place.
Correct.
Good reminder. We are going to go to the phone lines now. We have Clarice from Sitka on the line. Clarice, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for providing this information. I really appreciate it. Kelly Shabaka is asking for volunteers to be poll watchers. So I was wondering if Gail could go over what rules apply to poll watchers when they're watching voters. And also, what is their procedure for challenging ballots? Thanks so much.
Thanks.
There are too many steps and rules involved to go over, you know, in a short period of time. But basically, poll watchers are assigned by candidates or parties to show up and be at a polling place. And they cannot interfere with the election process. They're there, for the most part, to hear the names of people who have voted. And from what I've been told, I've never done this, and it's outside of my purview, is they have lists of people who are supposed to be voting in that precinct, and they'll check them off. And then they provide that information back to the candidate and campaign, and campaigns make calls to people, you know, don't forget to get out and vote. You know, they can also challenge the qualification of any voter that does appear to vote. And if that happens, the voter would need to vote a question ballot.
They would need to vote a question ballot even if the poll worker, the person who's working on behalf of division, says that their ID is fine and that they're on the list?
According to the law, yes, they can question the qualifications of a voter, yes.
Okay. Are there any qualifications for a poll watcher? Like, do they need any particular credentials or trainings?
Well, they have to be trained by the group that is appointing them. And our requirement is that they wear an identification badge that says their name and who appointed them to be a poll watcher. And then they check in with the chair people. And, you know, the main thing is they can't be there to cause a disturbance at the polling places. Mm-hmm. They're there to observe.
Okay. And are there rules in terms of, like, can every candidate have a poll watcher at a place, or is there a limited number of poll watchers?
A candidate can, or party can, choose to have poll watchers at any and all precincts if they so chose.
Okay. Clarice, does this clarify your question, or do you have any follow-ups? And she's gone. So thank you, Clarice, for your question. What else can people expect when they go to the polls on election day? Like, what happens when you walk in? Can you kind of walk through step by step what going to vote is like?
Sure. So you go to your polling place on election day, and again, they open at 7. And as long as you are in line to vote by 8 p.m., even if you haven't voted at 8, but if you're in line at 8 p.m., you would be allowed to vote. So what you'll do is you'll approach the election officials. There'll be one or two of them sitting there with the precinct register, which is the list of voters who are eligible to vote at that specific precinct. They'll ask you for identification. You provide your identification. They'll find your name on the register and you will sign it. And then you will go to the person who issues you the ballot and you will get your ballot in a secrecy sleeve. And you will go to the voting booth, mark your ballot. When you're done, you put it back in the secrecy sleeve, and then you can go to the precinct scanner in those precincts that use scanners and insert your ballot into the scanner. And then, you know, we encourage you to wait to make sure your ballot went through fine, and there'll be a little message that said ballot cast. You can get your I voted sticker and then be on your way.
If when you insert your ballot into the scanner, you get an error message, then what?
Well, an error message may pop up and say there's an overvote in this race or something to that effect. And you have an opportunity to then return to the board and tell them you want to spoil that ballot and get a new ballot and go back in and remark your ballot. Or you can say, I'm fine. And I'm just going to let it go through as is.
Okay. And so spoiling a ballot, that means it gets like ripped up and set aside and you get a new one.
Correct.
Okay. So again, I'd like to invite callers onto the program right now. Ask any questions you might have, last minute questions about the upcoming elections. The number statewide is 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us hometown@alaskapublic.org. So when the ballot goes into the scanner, then what happens? Like what, and the polls close, what happens with the ballots from there?
So the ballots remain locked in that ballot box throughout the day until the polls close. And the boards, the election workers, they start doing their accountability, they account for ballots used, and all unused ballots are then sealed up and put aside so they would never get commingled with the ballots that would be in the ballot box. Mm-hmm. So once they've done their accountability for how many unused ballots they have, how many ballots they use, they complete the ballot statement on the back of their precinct register, the workers then proceed to opening the ballot box and putting those ballots in a voted ballot envelope that is sealed and signed on the back by the board. And then those ballots are returned along with all of the other voting with the other voting materials back to a regional office on election night.
And then the envelopes are signed, they're sealed. Are there other security measures put into place too, like other double checks that folks have to make to make sure that nothing's been tampered with in any way?
Well, the precincts know their ballot numbers and how many ballots that they have received. So that's part of their accountability, their closeout process at the end of the night. We have seals on a variety of locations on the scanners and the ballot boxes. And so they also, prior to opening their polls, they note that the seal number matches what the division tells them it should be. If there's any issues with that before they open the polls, they're instructed to immediately contact the election supervisor for their precinct. And they just verify that the seals are all still intact and that the numbers match. And then there's always somebody standing by that scanner throughout the day to make sure that, you know, nobody tries to tamper with it in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. People have expressed to me concerns about the ballot scanning machine. Can you tell us a little bit about how that worked? People have expressed concerns that they're connected to the internet in some way. Are they?
They are not connected to the internet at any time during which the polls are open. Each piece of equipment is tested prior to each election by two boards, first by the bipartisan state review board, and then each regional office has regional counting boards, which are comprised of bipartisan voters from Alaska, and they also do testing, logic and accuracy testing on those machines to ensure that they are actually counting the ballots as they should be. So we have multiple layers of testing that are done and multiple layers of security that are done to ensure that they are functioning properly prior to each election.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more questions about this year's upcoming elections.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Today's guests are Gail Fanumiai, the director of the state's Division of Elections, and Jeanette Lee, a senior researcher with the nonpartisan Sightline Institute. And we're taking your questions at 907-550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. You can also drop us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Gail, I had another question about security. On Friday, U.S. security agencies, including the FBI, issued a warning about heightened threats of domestic terrorism against both politicians and election officials. And I feel like that's been kind of a constant conversation over the course of this election. Are you particularly concerned about threats in Alaska? And if so, what's happening in terms of security?
Well, Alaska has been fortunate and has not experienced the level of threats towards election officials or election workers as has been made known in the lower 48. In the division, I mean, we're encouraging our workers to be extra vigilant, and we are in close contact with our law enforcement officers. They're well aware that when election day is, and we will be reaching out to them should any unfortunate incidents arise. We are in contact with federal partners as far as system security and scanning, et cetera. And I feel we're in a really good position at this point.
Okay. What do you mean system security and scanning?
Well, I mean, part of what they're saying with domestic, is the targeting systems such as like the state network infrastructure. So we are making sure that we're doing adequate scanning and looking for any suspicious type of activity. So working with partners at the federal level and then our State Department of Division of Office of Information Technology.
Okay. And so looking at not just physical threats, but also potential online systems threats.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. One of the other big issues this year is, of course, ranked choice voting. Could you please explain how ranked choice voting works?
Well, ranked choice voting is a complete, obviously different way of how ballots are counted from our prior system, which was a plurality or winner takes all. So as folks saw with the special general election, you are going to get a ballot that has a grid, and it's going to have candidates on the left-hand side in rows, and then you're going to have columns. Could be columns up first choice through fifth choice, depending on how many candidates are in a race. And voters will take a look at that ballot and determine who they want to rank as their first choice, and continuing on second through the maximum number if they so choose. Nobody is required to rank all rankings. It is totally an individual voter choice if they want to do that or not. And then on election night, you know, we're going to count all first choice votes like we did in the special general election and continue to do that through the 15th day following the election. And if at that point, based on state law, if no candidate has received 50% plus one vote, then we will go to the ranked choice tabulations that would be required. And the candidate with the least number of votes would be eliminated. And then the next valid vote on those ballots would then be transferred to the remaining candidates. And you keep going until only two candidates remain.
Okay. And so the next valid vote, meaning like the next person that you have ranked who has not yet been eliminated.
Correct.
Okay. And with write-in candidates, when are those counted?
Well, write-ins are, the law says that if write-ins are not the top vote getter or in second place within a like half percent difference between them and number one, they would be eliminated at the very beginning. So they would never even be looked at unless they met one of those two criteria. So write-ins get eliminated and redistributed to the candidates, you know, according to the second choice on those ballots, if there are any. And then the ranked choice voting then would then eliminate a candidate in the next round.
Okay. And so if write-ins weren't counted and you wrote in someone for your second or your third ranking, those would just go to your next ranking down.
Correct.
Okay. I have a question that someone submitted over Twitter asking about ranked choice voting. She asks, if I pick just one person instead of ranking all of the candidates on either the House ticket, the Senate ticket, or any ticket, does that one vote I cast count? So I think what she's asking is basically, can she just vote for one candidate?
Yes. I mean, it's voters' choice to determine how many candidates they want to rank. And if you only rank one candidate, your vote stays with that candidate until they, you know, become eliminated. So your choice is going to stay with that candidate throughout the tabulation process.
Okay. And Jeanette, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more kind of about ranking. Like, are there advantages or disadvantages? Are there strategies? People have thrown a lot of questions our way about what the strategy is about in different elections.
Yeah, well, to address the question that, excuse me, just came in, you can vote for just one candidate, but you would be then kind of giving up the opportunity to have a say in the rest of the election or the rest of that race if your candidate gets eliminated. And it's important also to remember that ranking another candidate second or third or fourth, those rankings are not going to harm your first place candidate, your first choice candidate. So so you're certainly free to do that. I would just urge people to vote sincerely, because that is what the system is set up to help people do, is to vote your conscience, vote for who you really like, and then kind of go from there.
So does some of the confusion come in like people, instead of thinking you have one vote that sticks with the one candidate, if you rank more people, it gets divided? It doesn't. You just always have one whole vote that always sticks with your top person who is not eliminated.
Yes. As long as they're still in the race, then your vote sticks with them.
Okay.
And then it kind of goes on down the line.
All right.
If they get eliminated.
Mm-hmm. We're going to head to the phone lines again, and we have EJ from Sitka. EJ, thanks for calling in.
Question. Why isn't there voting on the weekends?
Why isn't there voting on the weekends?
Yeah.
Oh, in-person voting on the weekends?
Yeah.
That's a great question for Gail. Gail.
We do have voting taking place on weekends in some areas around the state, and that information is available on our website. Under our Where to Vote Early link in Sitka, there is not early voting or any kind of voting that takes place on the weekends.
And
it's a matter of finding a location and individuals willing to accommodate that request.
Okay. And is that true kind of statewide that you need to have people and a location in order to have any sort of in-person voting?
Correct.
Thanks, CJ. And we also have a question over email from Lizzie. With respect to the election watchers, can you speak to the steps voters and polling places can take if they're wary of intimidation? For example, in those small communities concerned about scrutiny, people can vote early and by mail. Polling places can emphasize the 75-foot rule, and election watchers who intimidate voters will be subject to X, Y, or Z. Can you talk a little bit about if people are afraid of voter intimidation?
Well, I think any issues of that, they should report immediately to the chairperson at the precinct and also to the Division of Elections, because that is something that, you know, it will not be tolerated, is intimidation in any degree, in any way, shape, or form, whether that be of a voter or of an election official.
And if someone feels intimidated by one of the poll watchers, they bring it to the attention of the elections officials who are there, then what can they do? Like, how is it decided if the poll watcher is asked to leave or stay, or
We'll have to take each one on an individual case by case basis. So if we don't hear about it, we can't even try to make the efforts to rectify the situation. So the big thing is, if they're feeling uncomfortable or feel like something's amiss, they need to report it to the chairperson. And then the chairperson will reach out immediately to the regional supervisor, who will then reach out to myself. And then between myself and the Department of Law, we will look at each situation on a case by case and contact the organization that might have put the poll watcher there if that's needed.
Okay. And in the email, she mentions polling places can emphasize the 75-foot rule. Can you explain that?
There's a 200-foot rule for electioneering, which means you can't talk about candidates or have any kind of campaign related materials within 200 feet to any entrance of a polling place. I'm not sure what the 75-foot rule is, but it's 200 feet to any entrance of a polling place. There can be no discussion of candidates, no campaign materials, no signs, etc.
Okay. Within those feet, or within that distance, can people be there to, like, share rules about elections, or like make sure folks know what's available to them in terms of their rights or in terms of assistance they can ask for?
I guess I'm not understanding your question.
So like in 2020, there was people who were at polls who were making sure that people knew, like, if you need translation assistance, you can ask for translation assistance. Or if you need someone to help you figure out your ballot, you're allowed to take someone into the booth with you.
Yes, that's not considered electioneering in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Which I guess brings me to another question. Like, if you do need assistance when you're at the polls, what kinds of assistance are available?
Well, first, they can have anybody of their choosing assist them throughout the voting process, as long as they're not a candidate, an employer, or a representative of the union of their employer. So anybody can assist them. It could be an election worker, or, you know, they could bring their, say, if my elderly father, say, and he wanted assistance, he could ask me to go with him to help him. We do have, in certain areas of the state, we have bilingual workers who are available to provide translation to voters. We also have the voting tablets, which can produce an audio version of the ballot and also produce an enlarged version of the ballot for those who may not be totally visually impaired but have some visual impairment. And then also we have some ballot magnifiers that voters can take into the booth and assist them to help make the ballot a little bit larger for them.
With the tablets, are those available at all polling places?
They are in all polling places on Election Day, yes. It's a requirement of federal law.
And you said people can get audio versions. Can they get audio versions of the ballot in multiple languages?
No. In specific precincts, they're designated. There will be an English version of the ballot, as well as the language that's required for that community. So, like, I don't know, but let's just say one precinct would have an English version, and then, like, Bristol Bay and General Central UPIC, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But those are not available. The languages are not available on a statewide basis. They're available in the community where the need has been determined as a result of the federal government, or also as a result of the Toyokak lawsuit that the division was involved with in 2014.
But in Anchorage, someone couldn't necessarily get the Bristol Bay UPIC audio version.
No, they can't. No, it's English only in Anchorage.
Okay.
Because that's not a covered area.
Okay. Are there any sort of translation lines people can phone into? Like, is there a telephone number people could call to help with translations?
We also have a telephone line where people can call and receive assistance as well. And that information is available at our precincts.
Was one of those situations where, like, someone would call on their personal cell phone to get the translations, or is there, like, a line available immediately there? Like a poll?
We would have to reach out to the person and make that arrangement. I mean, there's not somebody on immediately right at that moment in time, but we would do our best efforts to find someone to assist them.
Okay. You mentioned people can bring people with them into the voting booth. Can they bring other supplies or materials as well?
Certainly, they can bring a sample ballot with them. You know that they, and we're encouraging folks to look at sample ballots on our website, so they are familiar with their ballot and they understand about the ranking and they can practice the ranking. They can take that with them into the booth. Or just take it with you when you leave. Also, you know, it's the voter pamphlet could be taken in with you if you want to review things one last time about candidates. But, you know, we really encourage voters to do your homework at home. But if you need to bring a tool, especially with ranked choice voting, if you need to bring a tool with you to assist you, the sample ballot is probably, I think, your best bet for that.
Because you can just physically practice ahead of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Jeanette, you talk to a lot of voters and you do a lot of voter education. What sorts of advice do you give people for making sure that they're ready when they head into the polls?
Yeah, I think the best way to understand how to rank the ballot is visuals. So like Gail was saying, looking at the sample ballots. Also, there are some great video resources online. The Division of Elections made a great video on ranked choice voting. So I encourage them to check out their website and look at the video. On YouTube, there are also numerous ranked choice voting videos, including my personal favorite, which is it features sticky notes. It's very simple. It's only like a minute long. And once you're done watching it, you'll totally understand how it works.
Because so, it like physically people move the sticky notes to
one to the other. And you can see, you kind of get how the tallying works and everything.
Okay. What about if people are looking for resources on like specific ballot questions or specific candidates?
Well, I believe that Alaska Public Media has a great candidate resource.
Yeah, I suppose I shouldn't be plugging ourselves, but yeah, on our website, we do have a candidate comparison tool with answers from all the candidates in statewide races where you can easily compare exactly what they said to various questionnaires and on issues.
And then I will plug our FAQ, Sightline Institute's Alaska Elections FAQ, because we have a list actually with links to both your candidate, evaluation tool, as well as debates that have happened, key debates that have happened across the state in the last several months. And then if you just simply want to know who the candidates are, the Division of Elections has a comprehensive list, obviously, of everybody. So those are all good ways to kind of figure things out, as well as, of course, the election pamphlet that came in the mail to your home, hopefully, or wherever you are located.
And the pamphlet The pamphlet is available on our website as well. So people can go to elections.alaska.gov and view their specific pamphlet for their house district that they live in. You know, and it has information on candidates who submitted the information. It's not mandatory. It's an option for candidates to do so. It has information about the constitutional convention question, and it has information about the judicial retention candidates as well. And then some information about ranked choice voting and, you know, what to expect when you go vote, information on language assistance, et cetera.
Sounds like a really powerful resource. We invite you all to go to the division website and look up the pamphlet while we take a quick break and come back with more of your questions.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Today, our guests are Gail Finumiai, who is the director of the State Division of Elections, and Jeanette Lee, who's a senior researcher with the nonpartisan Sightline Institute focused on democracy. And we're taking your questions here live at 907-550-8433. That's in Anchorage, or you can also call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752. We're also taking emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. This is a chance to get any of your last-minute questions answered about this year's elections. Election Day is just over a week away, next week, November 8th, but early voting has already started around the state. Thank you again, both of you, for being here. We did receive one question earlier for Gail asking, what exactly is the process for voter roll cleanups?
Well, the division does that, believe it or not, on a daily basis in some fashion or another, and then has an annual list maintenance process that is very detailed and outlined in state law. So the division, we get information from voters directly saying they want to cancel their registration. We get information from other states that say a voter has registered to vote in another state, and so we will then cancel their registration. We receive information from the state's vital statistics office about deaths that happen in state. Family members also contact the division about family members who have passed, and we will inactivate records based on that. And then state law outlines a process that's done annually, which starts in November, and it's a very long, convoluted process, but we do this, and we do it daily, and we do this annual list maintenance as provided for in state law.
Okay. If someone moves but doesn't ever update their registration, so doesn't change it to a new address in Alaska, or doesn't register to vote in whatever state or location they've moved to, do they just stay on the rolls because you have no way of knowing that they've left?
Correct. Unless they're one of the triggers for being part of that long list maintenance process that I talked about is having a mail returned as undeliverable back to the division, or having not voted in a period of 4 years prior to us looking at the list. So there are ways for people to come off. It just doesn't happen instantaneously unless they tell us so.
Okay. If someone hasn't voted for 4 years, their name is removed?
Not necessarily. That's just one of the factors that's considered during the list maintenance process that's outlined in state law. You cannot remove voters solely just for not voting. That's part of the National Voter Registration Act.
Okay. Are people's voter registrations automatically updated if they register for the PFD?
Unless they opt out and tell us not to do so, yes.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. It's John from Anchorage. John, thanks for calling.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Thank you.
Great. I was that question you just raised about the PFD. I remember that, if I remember right, people are can be registered when they sign up for the PFD. And I was wondering why there hasn't been an effort to combine PFD with the voting process in order to, that would actually increase the number of people participating and maybe would force a requirement for updating people's addresses and so on. Because right now it's very difficult to deal with all these issues at different levels. Of course, maybe adding PFD would make things even more confusing. I don't know. But I do want to say one other thing, which is this is the best election system that I've ever participated in. I've lived in lots of different states in the past, and I wanted to say that despite all the criticisms about what goes on here, it's not necessarily correct. And I want to mention that I think the process here is great. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to talk about what you find to be so great about it?
Well, the fact that you have lots of flexibility on how one can vote in terms of accessing the voting system by mail. There's boxes available for drop-off as well as the regular U.S. mail processing. I see that the system is responsive to the needs of people, including the applications of languages and so forth. And I think, personally, I think the process has been updated continuously and provided has provided public with lots of ways of accessing their vote. So I think it's fantastic. So keep up the good work.
Thanks for weighing in, John. Are there other ways people can make sure that they get out and vote that we haven't talked about yet?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Is there anything, so people can early vote, they can mail in their ballots, they can fax in their ballots, they can get online delivery. Are there other, John was just really happy with different ways people can make sure that they participate in the process. Anything we've missed or any way that you think people aren't thinking about it, like other options people sometimes forget about?
Well, I just wanted to clarify that to get a ballot online or by fax, you have to apply to do that. So that's just not an automatic. You have to submit an application. And the deadline for that is 5 p.m. on November 7th. So that's an important date for people to remember if you don't think you can make it to your polling place on Election Day or you're not able to go vote early at our 100-plus locations that are located around the state. The other thing that a lot of people may not know about, if you find yourself in a situation where you're sick, you have a disability that does not allow you to go to your polling place on Election Day, you can appoint someone as your personal representative, and they can go to a voting location and get your ballot for you and take you your ballot to your home for you to vote, and then they would return that ballot back to the voting location for you.
And do you need to register that person in advance? Is there any special process, or can you just ask someone to do it for you?
You can just ask someone to do it for you. So I'll just go back and say, perhaps my father, when he was at the Pioneer Home, mm-hmm. he wasn't able to go to his polling place. So I would serve as his personal representative. I would go to his precinct and say, I'm here to get a ballot for my dad. And I would have to fill out some information on an envelope that has my name, my residence address, my identifier, who I'm picking a ballot up for, and sign it. And then the board would issue me his ballot. I would take it to him. He could vote it. And then there's a section on the envelope that the voter has to complete or can complete with the assistance of the personal rep, their name, their address, an identifier, a signature from the voter, and then again, a signature on that side of the envelope from their personal representative. And then that can be taken back to the precinct where you got it or any voting location.
Any voting location. So, okay. So you could take it back to, like, when you're going to vote at your own precinct, you could return his
right.
as well.
It would just have to be there by 8 p.m.
Okay. Can people have a personal representative to go to early voting locations as well?
Yes, this can happen at any early voting location right now. Yes.
Okay. We've talked a lot about what's happening now and getting people to vote. Are there any things people should know about election night itself? Like, what can you tell people about when results are going to be released? You mentioned it earlier that just the first round tabulation and then second round won't be until later. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of why that works that way?
Sure. Well, so on election night, we'll continue to release results like we always have for all of our other elections starting around 9 p.m. With ranked choice voting, you can't do tabulation for ballots unless you actually have an image of those ballots. And we have we have 131 hand count precincts. So in order to include those in any tabulation, we have to get those ballots back and scan them so we have the image that is needed to be used by the ranked choice voting program. As well as Alaska has a very lenient deadline for receiving absentee by mail ballots. And it is up to 10 days after the election for ballots that are postmarked within the United States and up to 15 days for ballots that are postmarked outside the United States, as well as we have thousands of question ballots that come in that are voted on election day at precincts around the state that have to be reviewed by boards and then opened and counted. And we made a collective decision here, the managers, when we started talking about ranked choice voting and how we were going to do this, that we felt it was best to have captured every possible first choice ballot before we then take on and do the ranked choice voting tabulation. So the ranked choice voting tabulation will take place in those races that it's required on November 23rd.
So when people cast their ballot, the machine scans it and it captures an image of the ranked choice race. And so you have all of those images and they're basically stored, but then the computer doesn't scan the images for the next sets of ranking until after every ballot you receive is scanned. Am I understanding correctly?
No. So what happens is the scanners are going to tabulate the first choice only because that's all they can do. So at your precinct level, the ballot's going to go through and it's going to tabulate at the end of the night when they close the polls. It's going to say number of votes by candidate for first choice. So we need all the ballots collectively and all the images. And then once we're done, we have all that. And we look at the races and we say, okay, whichever race does not have 50% plus one vote, we select that race to have ranked choice tabulation take place. And it's literally just a click of the button and then it does it round by round. And I don't know if you saw or listened or heard anything during the special general election. It literally takes, minutes to do.
And then it comes out with the detailed reports that show how votes changed or how people ranked and who was eliminated and whatnot.
Right. And how the votes from the eliminated candidate got transferred in that round. And then it will continue until you're down to two candidates.
Okay. We have a question over email asking, what is a citizen to do if they notice something illegal or witness something abnormal at a precinct? Who can they report to?
They should report that to the chairperson. And then the chairperson would then report that back to the regional supervisor. And then again, that would get funneled to me and that would be looked at. Or they could call the division, any division office directly.
Okay. And are poll workers, would the chair be wearing a name tag that says that person is the chair for that polling place?
I honestly don't know if they have specific badges that say they're chair. I think they just say election official, but they could report it to any person. And typically it's the chairperson who then conveys that information to the regional supervisor.
Okay. So report it to any of the people.
Of the election officials that are working. Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara, for emailing in a question. We only have a few minutes left. Do either of you have any sort of last minute reminders that you'd like to share with people before the polls close in a week and a day? Gail, any sort of last-minute thoughts? Mm-hmm.
So this is Gail, and just encouraging voters to have a plan. You know, if you think there's any way possible you're not going to be able to go to your precinct on election day, then vote now, because your options outside of election day and voting early are very limited to the other options I mentioned earlier, getting a ballot delivered online or by fax. So, you know, take a look at your schedule. And if you don't feel you can fit voting in on November 8th between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m., then there are options every day now through Election Day to vote early at a number of locations around the state. Look up your polling place. Find out where you're supposed to go vote if you're planning to vote in person on Election Day. Print off a sample ballot. Take a look at your candidates. Practice marking your candidates using the new ranked choice voting process. And then again, any questions, just do not hesitate to go to our website, elections.alaska.gov, or call us here in Juneau at 866-952-8683.
And is there a quick website for people to check, like, their either the status of their absentee ballot or where their precinct is?
Look up your polling place right on our website. There's a link there that says look up your polling place.
Okay.
My voter information also will let you know if we received your ballot back and if your ballot has been sent.
Okay. Myvoterinformation.alaska.gov.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jeanette, any sort of last minute reminders you have for people, reasons people should go out and vote?
Yeah, I would say that building on Gail's comments, do that for yourself, plan ahead, and also encourage the people around you to do the same. Your family, your friends, your coworkers, your book club, you know, all the people who you are in contact with every day, just encourage them to make a plan as well and get out to vote, because it really is a community endeavor.
Is there any sort of thing you would suggest to say to help kind of start that conversation?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. Talking about how important it is and how meaningful it is to vote, and that it's just one vote, but it does matter. It does make a difference.
All right. Yeah. Well, that is it for Hometown Alaska. Thank you very much to our guests, Gail Fanumiai, the head of Alaska's Division of Elections, and Jeanette Lee with the Sightline Institute. Thank you to everyone who asked questions over social media, email, and the phone. Our producer was Ammon Swenson. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm your host, Ann Hellman. You can find more election resources on our website, alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening, and please do head to the polls.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.